The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Man in Line is on till one today, and today, well, deja vu. He started in Castletown Commissioners in 1976, served until 1981, then a career at the top of Manx politics as an MHK, Minister of Health and Social Services, Local Government and Environment, Transport, Tourism and Leisure, and Chief Minister between 2006 and 2011. And now, like a boomerang, Tony Brown is back as a Castletown Commissioner. Pastor Mike, good afternoon.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon, Andy.
Well, you know what the question's going to be. What were you thinking?
Well,
why have you done this?
Well, it certainly wasn't in my plan. I mean, I was relatively happily retired in terms of what you can retire, but I'm very much involved in the community of Castletown and some aspects across the island. And I was happy doing all that. But over a period of a couple of years, there have been issues in Castletown, some of it related to how government treats the town, some of it related to what's going on in the town. And I was being asked consistently by many people over that period if I would stand for the commissions. And my stock answer was, no, I've been there. I really don't see that it's something I need to go back into or would wish to at this stage. And things basically came to a head over the public meeting relating to the Market Square, and the way that people were treated I felt was just not acceptable. And if Castletown was to have a good future, and I don't have all the answers and never have had, but if it's going to have a good future, we have to have people in there who are committed, and it's no use me just standing on the outskirts criticising what's going on. I have experience and knowledge that I think can help.
So you're not invisible in Castletown. You're out and about all the time. You talk to people. Mm. What was the mood on the street like about the square?
Well, it was mixed views. There are a lot of people who like the square being closed all year round, and we have to accept that, and that was always acknowledged. But I think it's fair to say that the majority of people only see the logic of it being closed through what is the summer, and that's a determination that needs to be clarified, I think. And also, businesses were finding it difficult because of the not just the square but parking as well generally, which was having an impact on people coming to shop in Castletown. Yeah. And whether we like it or not, at this stage in society, the car still plays an important part of how people go shopping, and especially where you've got an older population, where those people find it difficult to walk too far. They may have mobility issues, or they may just be, you know, slow in terms of how they can get to and from, and if they're just popping in for stuff, then, you know, it becomes an issue for them. So I mean, the important thing is it wasn't the issue, it was an issue, and it was one that I felt we could resolve quite easily, and I hope we can.
You mentioned in interviews up to the election the retail future, the future as, if you like, a trading post for Castletown. And it's a long-time retailer yourself. How do you view the mood amongst retailers and the future for Castletown?
Well, yes, I mean, I was a retailer for 30 years in Castletown until I retired, and the mood is quite concerning. I mean, there are a number of smaller proprietor businesses, meaning they're owned by the people who run them. And to be honest, I mean, a lot of them are finding it extremely difficult. It is a difficult retail environment right across the Isle of Man anyway, and I think we have to acknowledge that, and I certainly always have. I often say, yes, you know, we do have the websites, but in my day, we had the catalogues. They were the biggest competitor we used to have on the island. And you have to compete. compete. I mean, to be successful in business, you have to compete. And if a town like Castletown, and it's the only town in the south of the island, doesn't have a successful and established retail sector, it will cease to be a town. It will just become a street with a few shops in. And quite honestly, I mean, I care too much about Castletown to allow that to happen. And as I say, I don't have all the answers, but what I think is important is at least our local authorities should be sitting down to say, how do we try to improve on the position we have? And part of that is supporting the traders we have, which unfortunately they were reluctant to do. They wouldn't sit down and talk with them. And the frustration throughout the town was growing quite extensive over the last few months.
So when you say supporting retailers, what do you think part that do the commissioners play in that?
Well, first is, when necessary, you've got to sit down and talk to them and say, what are your issues? How are we able to assist? And there are limitations on what a local authority can do. I mean, I'm very much of the view, the one good thing about retailing is it's free to come and go as it wants in terms of how it develops, how it changes. It's not restricted by regulations in the sense of certificates or anything. So I'm very, very happy for that, because I think that is the right way. It means somebody like myself can just start up, which I did. I mean, I borrowed £1,000 back in 1982, '81, and decided to set up a business with my wife. We both said, "Yeah, let's go for it." And so there is that freedom there, and some succeed and some don't. But I think what's important is to get the environment around the area right, so it's attractive, and the square does play a part in that. In the summer, square is a lovely place to sit and enjoy, and I'm all in favour of that. But you've also critically got to get your parking correct. You need to have convenient parking, no matter what people say. If you don't have convenient parking, people will shop elsewhere, and we know lots of Castletown people now are doing their everyday shopping in Port Erin. They're getting in their car from the house and just driving to Port Erin, and we have to try and reverse that, and that's going to take a bit of planning.
And of course, at one time there were three banks in the square. Now none. So as you say, people may bank with Isle of Man Bank and may go to Port Erin because there's a bank there. How do you view the loss of those banks?
Well, it's been a disaster for the town. I mean, I can remember back in the 70s when I worked in Port St Mary, and the banks, the Isle of Man Bank and Westminster Bank merged. They move out of the High Street in Port St Mary, and it basically killed off the High Street. So banks do still play an important part. We know banks are going to evolve into a different animal. In fact, my criticism of that is they're going too fast. They're leaving the community behind, and really they don't care. They're just getting on with what they see as their business, and that's it. So it is a big blow for Castletown. Luckily, the premises have been taken over and they've been repurposed for different uses. But it's sad. I mean, we now don't have a bank in Castletown. We have the post office, and there's limited services they can provide. And we don't know where the post offices are going in the future, although it doesn't sound as if it's a great news. But, you know, we just don't know yet what government's going to do with their post offices. And modern technology is great. We all use it. I use it. But there's an awful lot of people don't use it, and they're now being left behind. And so how we can overcome that, I don't know. But I think what's important is the town still has its two main shopping streets. It still has the square and the parade and Castle Street, which are the main shopping areas and retail, if you like, cafes, whatever. And that has to be developed. We've had good news recently that Leonardo's been taken over and it's being refurbished, and that will reopen soon. And, you know, things are changing in that aspect of it. But it's not just that you sit back and rely on the private sector to do what they think is the right thing. The local authority and government all have a part to play in this, to encourage investment, which creates jobs, creates income for the island. And it's important that that's spread right across the island.
OK, let's get to the lines now. And Howard's first with us today. Howard Fastermeyer, good afternoon. You're with Castletown Commissioner Tony Brown.
Yeah, a well-known man on the island. All I can say is thank you for coming back to the voice of a sensible man again. But what I found, and particularly in this election for the town council in Douglas, or the city council they call themselves now, another farce, out of the four people that were up for election, only one came to the house to have a talk. And the other two, making up the three for the council, were elected. And I haven't a clue, never seen them, never heard from them, apart from a manifesto shoved through the door. Do you think this is the way that the politicians, and I'm talking about MHKs as well now, are moving towards? They have an agenda. They set up what they want to do, but the people outside are just the numbers that are electing them. And the likes of yourself now have come into Castletown, and it's a breath of fresh air coming in. Some people may say different, but personally speaking, I think it is a breath of fresh air, and somebody who has a sensible working life to contribute to the city itself, the Castletown, and the working area and the working people.
Okay. Did you do any door knocking, Tony Brown?
Well, I think the first, yes, I did to some degree. It's very limited. I think, in fairness to all local authorities, in the Isle of Man, the lead-in time is a very short period, and therefore it is impossible to get round to talk to everybody. The other thing I think is important is if you've got a good relationship with the people that in the community you live within, you're seeing them every day anyway, regardless. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And I went out, like the other candidates in Castletown, I can only talk about there, delivering manifestos and taking the opportunity to talk to people as we could. But I think what's important is it shouldn't stop talking as soon as the election's over. You're there to talk and listen and discuss with people right throughout your term, so that hopefully you can have a good understanding of what you think the town and the people want. And, you know, I think that's certainly what I do. And I can just thank you for your kind remarks, Howard, which are appreciated.
Howard?
Yes, this is what the older politicians and councillors, etc., commissioners used to be like. But they seem to have changed in their attitude as a holier-than-thou attitude in a lot of cases. And it's not conducive to good governance. And this is the problem. You never see them. We've had two or three elections up here, and several of those members have gone under the council. You never heard of them since. But whereas at one time, I know we're only a small island, and we do see a lot of people, but you don't hear of surgeries and various aspects like that where the public can go and, I wouldn't say grievances, but their problems and their worries.
Yes, I mean, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, if you're going to have good government, whether it's at government level, national level in the Isle of Man, or at local level, understanding and representing your community is critically important. You have to understand what people are concerned about, what it is they hope to see for the future. And as a representative, you then consider those issues, and that helps you basically determine the future of where the island goes. And in this case, determine the future of the town I live in.
Okay, Howard.
That's a good way of looking at life. And as I say, you are part of the Castletown area, the southern area, and having a personal interest like that is a big, big yes. Because some of the people that's coming into politics now, 10 years ago, wouldn't have known where the Isle of Man was, never mind what it is.
Okay. All right, Howard.
That's the problem.
We appreciate
Thank you, Howard.
It. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, take care. Bye.
Okay,
now.
Bye-bye.
Now.
Bye. Do you perceive that politics has changed much, Tony Brown?
Oh, yes, I think it's changed a lot in terms of the bureaucracy that now controls politics in a way it didn't before. Some of it good, some of it not so good. And clearly, I think how members who are elected deal with constituents has changed quite dramatically. I mean, they're relying very much on technology now, and technology does have a role to play, but, you know, you'll never beat people standing there and talking to people and listening to what they have to say, trying to find out what people are thinking. I mean, that's all part of what you do. I mean, I did that and I've done that all my political life, and even when I retired, that carried on, not necessarily because I wanted it to, but because I still continued to be involved with people, and therefore, you know, their frustrations, when they were happy, when they liked what was happening, that all came out in just general discussion that happens right across the island.
When you ever had to tell constituents bad news. I mean, sometimes people want their own way, and you have to say that can't happen. How did you approach that?
Well, the first starting point has to be you have to be honest, even if people don't like what you tell them. If you're honest and you know what you're doing, or you know why you can't do something, and you don't want to change it, because don't forget, especially in national politics, you have considerable authority to encourage change. Then you know you have to give that bad news, because sometimes some of these issues are not in the control of the politicians. And when I say that, I mean because of their international issues. They're not, and I'm drifting into national politics now, which I'm trying to avoid. But at local level, you have to be open. You have to tell people what's going on. One of the big issues, and certainly in Castletown, over the years that I've seen a big change, is there is virtually no reporting by the newspapers of what goes on in the commissioners anymore. All we see are statements issued by the commissioners to say on the odd occasion what they've done. But that's not good for democracy. Democracy relies on press coverage, whether it be the radio, whether it be news, the written press. And radio and TV, for example, have limited abilities on what they can do because of the nature of the animal, whereas the written press gives people what they want. Now, yes, you know, you can do that through, as they do, through the websites as well as the printed press. But if you're not covering the meetings, you can't do it at all. And if you're only relying on the any statements issued by a local authority, I mean, it's written the way they want it written. So it's not necessarily in the best interests of the community. So I think that's an issue. And I don't know how we resolve that one, because I do understand the commercial pressures that all these businesses are under to try and, if you like, survive themselves. But, you know, people like news. You know, in the Isle of Man, we like skeet. We want to know what's going on. We want to know what they did and why they did it. So coming back to the point, how do you give bad news? Regardless of what's covered in the press, you have to be honest with people, and people respect that even if they don't like what you say.
Okay, here's a message in from Rob. Nice to see Tony Brown back. I'm not sure he ever went away, but back doing this. And Rob says, what's your view of the... he's talking about the fact that Ballasalla is tripling in size almost with the big estate. What's your view of the development that's going to be where the Buchan is?
Well, I haven't seen it, to be honest. I do know that the designation of the Buchan School originally, and I'm going to have to do a lot of catching up, remember. I mean, I've not been, deliberately not been getting that involved in what goes on. But when it was zoned originally in the 1991 plan, it was zoned for, if it was redeveloped, low-density housing. And if that's carried through, because it was low density in woodland, if I remember, then that shouldn't be a major issue. If it's large development, that's likely to have a big impact, and mainly on the road structure. Arby Road is at capacity now because the school's opposite. There are plans on the Department of Education, the outline plans, to actually put the primary school, Castletown Primary School, on the same site as the Castletown High School, which personally I think is an absolute disaster. But the impact on Arby Road and down through the bypass and down through the town will actually be quite immense, and I hope Highways will, and I'm certain as a commissioner I will be looking at how that is going to be dealt with, how is it going to be managed. So if you've got these two big developments, how are we going to cope with it?
Yeah, I mean, high density is what, 12 to an acre sometimes?
Yeah.
They, you know, that would be an enormous number of houses there.
Well, in the one we were, it was low density, you see, with in woodland. So it was actually not a lot of houses.
Right.
So I don't know if that's changed. And until I start to look at these things, I mean, I'm not yet officially a commissioner. I'm elected, but I'm yet to be put in place like the rest of my colleagues when we do the declaration. Which is next week, then in fact I'm not privy to all, I'm privy to what the public can see. I just have been concentrating on an election.
Okay, which just brings me on to the other point, which is housing. And of course, regarding getting younger people and couples onto the housing ladder, how much space is there for development in Castletown if young people want to buy a house?
Yeah, Castletown's quite limited because the boundaries of the town. I mean, the sea's on one side and then we've got the parishes round us on the other. There is land available. Whether it's accepted by the town as being land that could be developed for residential development is a matter that time will tell. I often find that one of the issues these days is the pace of development. I mean, if you look at how quickly Ballasalla's been developed, it had a massive impact on Ballasalla as you come into it. And that's happened in a very short period of time. I've taken the view for many years that it should be phased development to meet the needs of the town and to some degree the wider populace, but not at a rate where you suddenly build 500 houses in about 18 months to 2 years. That is not what people want. Now, okay, that's fine. People say, ah, yes, but you already live in a house, you're bound to think that way. But in fact, the biggest problem that young people have for getting housing is a lack of a government mortgage scheme. The scheme that is there only provides support, financial support, but they still have to go to a bank or an equivalent society to get the money, and they can't get 100% mortgage. They get 75%. So many of them can't save up the money they need to get the deposit. And furthermore, it's hard to get a mortgage on an old property, which of course is what many of us go into. I was the same.
So would you, just run that through, what used to be available, the government mortgage scheme, how did it work for new listeners?
Well, the government mortgage scheme that we used to have was government actually gave a mortgage and a small grant, and it was limited to your income, right? And if your income was below a certain level, the government would give you a mortgage over the lifetime of your house, first time buyer's mortgage scheme only at that stage. Eventually they did a second time, but first time originally. And it was a fixed interest rate. And in fact, government made money out of it because, you know, they were using resources they had that was in deposit, and they lent it to people to get onto the housing market. And this all came about because of the deep concern in the community in the 60s and 70s, where people, young people, just couldn't buy properties, and the houses were being built everywhere, but they weren't for young people. And there's no logic at all, in my opinion, of driving young people into private rented accommodation if they can't afford it. In other words, if the majority of their income then goes on rent, and that's what's happening at the moment.
Let's get to the lines again, and Julian's on with Tony Brown. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy, and congratulations on your new appointment, Tony.
Thanks, Julian.
Yeah, it can only be good for Castletown.
Well, I hope so.
My question for you. Yeah, I'm sure it will. My question for you, a slightly more national question. There's been several private members' bills put before Tynwald in recent years. We've had the Assisted Dying Bill, the Bishop's Vote, and especially this new so-called Safe Access Zones and Protected Spaces Bill. My question is, are private members' bills subject to less scrutiny than full government bills? And if so, how much less scrutiny?
Yeah, the answer to that is no, because the House of Keys is the ultimate determiner of whether or not legislation goes through. And whether it's a private member's bill or a government bill, they have a duty to the public to examine it in the great detail it requires, regardless of who put it before them.
Were there many private members' bills when you were Chief Minister?
Oh, yeah, there was quite a few. I mean, the Isle of Man legislature is actually, the members of the legislature are very lucky. They have an easy access to do this. They just put a motion to the House of Keys for leave to introduce, and the majority of those leave to introduce are approved, and then they develop their legislation. That legislation, in most cases, is developed, and certainly it's usually run past the Attorney General's department. The Attorney General can only give advice on it because ultimately the member does what the member wants to do, but critical to protect the public's interest, and the zones bill is one that really is one that concerns me, as people know, and I wrote in a lengthy contribution as to why it was, in my opinion, seriously deficient. It's up to the members of the House to examine these in great detail and then only pass what should be acceptable in society.
Julian?
Yeah, the reason I asked the question is I've had two occasions in recent times. We've had Claire Christian answering Chris Thomas in Keys about a question about resources. And she answered, resources are not delegated until a private member's bill goes through. And also I asked David Ashford about, had there been any cost calculations for the Assisted Dying Bill, which as far as I know still hasn't been done. So are those same cost calculations, are they only talked about afterwards when a main government bill goes through, or in other words, are things going through that haven't been costed yet?
Right. Well, I mean, I can only talk about my time in there, which is quite some years ago now, but I don't think the procedure's changed. The answer is it's absolutely correct that the Attorney General will not give any resources to a private member for a private member's bill until the House has given it leave to introduce. That's normal, because otherwise, you know, what are they doing? So once the House has said, yes, we're happy for you to introduce legislation on this basis, and they're talking about the principle only, then the Attorney General is able to provide the private member with all the resources required to construct legislation that can then be put before the House. It was always in my day, and I was Speaker for 5 years, and I made this clear on a number of occasions, that regardless of whether it's a private member's bill or a government bill, there was no difference in priority. It was all based on who was ready to move. And if the member's private bill was ready before a government bill, it was not held back. And as far as I know, that's still the case. As far as costings go, the member is meant to justify in the House of Keys, in the public forum, what it is they're doing and what it's likely to cost. And if they don't, it's for the members of the House to challenge the member to do that. And if the member doesn't do it, the House can send it to a committee and say, well, we want to know more about this because you haven't provided adequate costings and we don't know the implications. Now, that's the procedure. That's really the paramount role of a legislature, is to ensure that any legislation that goes through the House of Keys, one, it's reasonable and is acceptable to the community, and two, it's affordable.
Okay, Julian, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much, Andy. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah,
cheers.
Thanks, Julian.
28 minutes before one, let's just say a few words about you talked about this Access and Safe Zones Bill. What were your concerns again, briefly?
Well, basically, it impacts directly, without proper control and scrutiny by Tynwald, on people's rights. You could own a piece of land. The Department of Home Affairs could come in and zone it as a restricted zone, regardless that you own it, and you can't go on it anymore. Now, there's an initial consultation, but once that consultation is over, and you might say you don't want it, and they have a reason why they do, and I'm being a bit broad on this, they then put that in place every 3 years without any further consultation. They can do that indefinitely and without going to Tynwald.
Tony Brown is on Man in Line between now and one. You want to get in touch, text 166177, WhatsApp, same number, email studio@maxradio.com, call 661368.
Did you hear?
Hear what?
Skipton International has a fixed rate bond at 4.4%.
Oh, really? That's a strong return. How does it work?
Skipton International's based in Guernsey, and with £100,000 or more deposit, you can lock in that great rate, fixed until 31st of March 2026.
Sounds like a smart move. I'll check it out.
For details on all of Skipton's savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com today. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
I am one car centre, the place to go. Great choice and prices so low. I am one car centre on Domain Road. Cars of every kind, at prices that are hard to find. Visit on Facebook to see the range, or call 611040. Great service choice and prices low. I am one car centre, the place to go.
There's monkeys and meerkats, penguins galore. You can meet with a panda, owls, lemurs and more.
The Currax Wildlife Park is open 7 days a week. So book your tickets and experiences online now at currackswildlifepark.im.
You're never fully dressed without a smile.
Yes, this is the week to put on your very best smile. Smash that song, perfect that poem, and come to the Villa Marina, the home of the Manx Music, Speech and Dance Festival. There from now until Saturday, May the 3rd. Can't get to the Villa? We've got you covered. Follow the Guild right here on Manx Radio with daily breakfast reports, a highlights programme every evening at 9, plus videos and podcasts at manxradio.com. Your complete Manx Music Festival station.
Smile, darn you, smile!
Manx Radio's coverage of the Manx Music Festival is brought to you with Spectrum Windows.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Tony Brown, Castletown Commissioner, and Stephen's with us. Hi, Stephen, you're live with Tony Brown.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Mr. Brown, and hi, listeners.
Hi, Stephen.
I wonder, could I just ask
what your thoughts are on what can be done via local authorities for the issue of heritage, the built environment, conservation, and the extraordinary decision of Bus Vannen, in conjunction, I suppose, with Manx National Heritage, to withdraw a bus route from to the Sound. It seems almost like there's a national decision to not place tourism and heritage at the level, in my view, it should be done. And I wonder what you think you can do to bring it to the issue, because it's not just the South which is being affected. There's Peel and Castletown and Ramsey have all got a built environment, and yet with this administration it seems to be ignored.
Yep.
So I just wondered what your thought would be, what could be done with local authorities to highlight these issues.
Well, certainly if Luca Castletown has got more heritage, built heritage, than anywhere else, and in fact more history, because it was the capital of the island from the sort of 13th century right through to the 19th century. So all the history of the island, or most of its important history, was in Castletown. I think the issue is, and I've looked at this through the documentation, the Isle of Man government now does not have a policy on heritage. It's not mentioned in their policy documents. There's no commitment to heritage. Taking Castletown, for example, we've got the Nautical Museum in dire straits, in need of refurbishment. The Peggy's been out of Castletown now for 10 years. It was taken away in 2015 and sits in a shed in Braddon. The Nautical Museum is only open part of the week. The old House of Keys is not open except by appointment. The old 12th century grammar school is not open except by appointment. This is not how you run our heritage. The heritage is the one thing that's going to attract people to the Isle of Man, because we have beautiful countryside, we have beautiful beaches, but we also have a lot of unique heritage, which is unique to the Isle of Man because we were not part of the UK. And we are really underestimating the value of that. I mean, I say we, I mean government. Now, certainly in my role in the commissioners, I will be doing all I can to encourage M&H, who I know would like to open these places but are being underfunded, and to get government to be more committed to it. The Nautical Museum, for example, M&H have gone out and, I understand, identified support, financial support of about £2 million. The scheme's going to cost £6 million because it is a big scheme, and it'll see us for the next 30 years or so, and maybe even longer if it's done. But the government will not, and the Treasury will not, provide any funding at all at this stage to support that scheme. And in the meantime, we have the Peggy, a world-famous yacht, lying in a shed. Okay, an air-conditioned shed to try and keep it in good order, and people go in there to see it if they want. But we have the Nautical Museum, again, a unique part of what was Bridge House, the Quayle family, the smuggling of the Isle of Man. And it's just being allowed to go rotten because the government will not commit to it. Now, as a commissioner in Castletown, I can tell you I will be doing all I can to encourage the government to actually take proper action on this. And if necessary, that will mean talking to the Chief Minister.
Stephen?
That's excellent news. I think this is what's been lacking on the island. We haven't had somebody to champion heritage, not just for Castletown but around the island in general, and I do hope that you can form alliances possibly with Peel, Ramsey, Castletown, other local authorities, and most importantly MHKs who represent these areas, I feel have been a little bit lacking as well. We need to get them moving as well.
Well, okay. Most MHKs that I talk to have no interest at all in our heritage. They see it as not really anything that important, and that means then there's no drive to do something. Just one thing, if I can cover the bus to Craigneish, although it's not in Castletown, and I have been talking with people who are involved in that. I think we're all pleased to see that the minister is now saying she's reviewing that, which is fine. But if you look back on the, as far as I can tell, detail the Hansards of the questions asked about this and statements made by previous ministers. They've all mentioned how it's not very good, it's not very effective. None of them have said what the actual saving is financially to Bus Vannen for not having this service. And I can tell you now, it's minimal.
Okay. All right, Stephen, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen.
Let me just pick you up on that. You said most MHKs you speak to don't see the value or don't value culture?
They don't seem to give... most of them don't seem to have any interest in it. It's just there. And, you know, unless... I know this from my time in the Keys. Unless you have people driving the heritage,
no.
Then in fact nothing gets done because it's seen as something we don't necessarily have to have. But it's about who we are, it's about our being. This is the Isle of Man. And I mean, the tourist people, how are they going to attract people here if there's nothing there? Give an example, Election Day. Stood outside Castletown Town Hall, fella over from America, looking up his family, and we got yapping, and he said to me, "And why is everything shut?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I've been to that grammar school. I've been to the nautical. I've been to the old House of Keys, and they're all shut. Why are they shut?"
Well, let's talk about Maxton National Heritage. And then, as you say, underfunded. Now, years and years ago, there was a character called Stephen Harrison, who was nothing if not forward. He would bang the table occasionally.
He's progressive.
Is that what Manx National Heritage needs?
No, what Manx National Heritage needs is a support from Tynwald and the government to fund it properly and invest in it properly so that it can actually achieve what the Isle of Man needs to secure our heritage.
Okay. Let's go. David's with us now. Hi, David. You're live with Tony Brown.
Hi, Andy and Tony. Great to get there, mate. I look forward to at the AGM for the Municipal Association, and we get a free meal.
Oh, very
right.
Good. You paying, are you?
No. We'll all look forward to seeing you. I'm not kidding you, because at the end of the day, I'm with you on this one now. The local authorities have been treated miserably by government. The ministers, the certain members in the government departments, are not treating us with respect. And that's my statement from me as a commissioner from Onchan, an individual. But anyway, I was going to ask you about what do you think about the arm's length companies? I am worried now that ministers and government seem to have these things about the new housing board, although that's dying on its feet. They've been caught out on that particular one. But all these other boards that are there, and we can't ask questions about them, you know, how they're funded, who are the people that are in there. And can I ask you the other thing is, regarding the new local government bill, which you'll be definitely interested in, is the amendments in there from Mr. Hooper, from Ramsey, which is going to dictate to us. And not, we weren't consulted. Local authorities weren't consulted on it.
Yeah, well, as you know, I was Minister for Local Government and the Environment for 5 years. Before that, I was on the then Local Government Board for 5 years. And I've always been very pro-local government as an important structure, part of the structure of the governments of the Isle of Man. And we all have our ups and downs about what we think about how they operate, but the basic structure is reasonably sound. It doesn't mean there can't be adjustments, but I mean, there are some areas you can make better. But can I just say that I think the way, and one of the reasons, part of the reason I stood, is the way that government is now treating local authorities. They are, in my opinion, basically ignoring them. We've got this set of amendments from Mr. Hooper from Ramsey, which the government and most members of House of Keys opposed in the Keys. Mr. Hooper, who's a member of the Department of Infrastructure, which is meant to be the department that supports local government, seems to have persuaded the minister, who seems to have persuaded the government, that now they will adopt his amendments as policy, and they're going to ask the Legislative Council to now introduce them. They went out to consultation during the election period for local authorities, so it was virtually impossible to get any views from the local authorities. And these will have major impact on cost to the ratepayers. If what they are wanting to introduce is enacted, it will mean that local authorities, and only local authorities, will actually be able to charge for not achieving what somebody deems they should have achieved in their responsibilities. That cost will go just straight to the ratepayer. So money that could be used to improve the area you live in will go in, to use a term, fines, because government has deemed that that local authority hasn't achieved what it wants. My question is, well, why aren't you doing it to the statutory authorities? Why aren't you doing it to statutory boards? Why are you not doing it to all your quangos you've set up, these quangos? And why aren't you doing it to government departments? It's double standards. And I don't believe local authorities should be ignored like this. I think it's disgraceful.
Why do you think it's happening?
Well, I think one of the problems is we have so many members of the House of Keys now who've never served in local government. So they have no understanding of it. They don't understand the concept. And they see it as a bit of an irritant. And then you've got a few members riding their own chariots of what they want to see happen. And government, and it used to always be that the Minister for, as it was in my day, local government, and now is infrastructure, were there to really look after and, if you like, protect the local authorities. Yes, make changes when they're necessary, but basically say, are they necessary? Are they reasonable? Is this what we need? And this is a case, in my opinion, of something that really is just not necessary. And I think it's awful, to be honest.
David?
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. Look forward to seeing you shortly. Yeah. Bye.
Okay, thanks, David. Okay, bye.
So, Tony Brown, regarding this, if you like, opposition almost, or penalty on local government, is this elected members or is it officers?
No, it's elected members. This is a private members' amendment. I mean, they're quite extensive. You need to go back. You look back in when it was done in January and you look at what's there. I mean, they are quite draconian in terms that, when I say draconian, I suppose that's a bit heavy, but they're quite restrictive. It's adopting UK policies for local authorities that are actually bigger than the Alamann government and have bigger budgets. It's just nonsense. Most of our local authorities are community based. They're there to look after our small communities, provide services that we need at a very local level. Democracy works best when you have local level representation at ground roots, and then you build from that. And I think there's a real misunderstanding of what the Alamann's local authorities are there to do.
Tony Brown is on Man in Line. We've just got a few moments left.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted. We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Employers, having trouble with staff and need reliable advice? Employees, are you treated fairly in the workplace or do you have a grievance?
The workplace can be problematic on both sides. For any work-related legal issue, contact the employment law experts, Mann Benham. They advise employers and staff on all work-related problems with sound professional advice and a transparent fee policy. To arrange your free consultation at Mann Benham, call today on 639 350.
Mann Benham, here for you.
Check out the Groudle Glen Railway timetable for some great days out. Visit the Clifftop Tea Rooms and Sales Emporium, book a special steam tea, and join our free family train spotting challenge. Hop on the line that goes uphill to the sea, the Groudle Glen Railway. For times, see ggr.org.uk or visit on Facebook.
The previous message was brought to you by QVH, the island's premier serviced offices and co-working space in the heart of Douglas. Call 639 940 for more information or visit qvhpremieroffice.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Tony Brown is on, newly elected Castletown Commissioner. Mr. Brown is right, says John. The amount of UK journalists who come to the Isle of Man are ecstatic about the castles and the incredible railways. And yet, as you were saying, that the schooling in Castletown is closed by appointment only. Is that right?
Absolutely. If you look at the document that was issued recently by Manx National Heritage, they set out when these places are open. And I just find it, I mean, and I don't blame specifically MNH because they're trying to work within a tight budget and they're trying to look at, you know, how you prioritise, which, you know, they have no choice to. But I mean, to have the old House of Keys, which tells the story, the unique story of our structure of Parliament, to be closed and only open by appointment. I come down in my car, say I'm a holidaymaker, I'm staying in Douglas, I get in my car with a wife and two kids, come to Castletown. oh, there's the old house keys. Let's go and have a look. Shut. Shut. It's nonsense. These places need to be open. And the government needs to assess what is the value of these. I mean, they got told basically very abruptly by those who came to look at the railways and the electric trams that they must be mad if they were going to close them, right? They were looking to save money. It's not all about money. You know, money is very important to ensure our society is successful. But it's also about what you're providing. It's about the service. Don't lose sight of what you're trying to provide. And how on earth can visitors enjoy the Isle of Man if when they come here, some of these facilities are shut?
OK, a note in from Ron who just said, what Mr Brown says is right, but when he was in power, revenues were roaring. The Isle of Man made an awful lot of money in the time when you were, that 30 years you were in. The Isle of Man was roaring ahead. Times are tough now.
Well, when I first got in the House of Keys in 1981 and through to 86, and in fact a bit later than that, in 82, the first budget, we had £1.5 million in reserve and we couldn't fund all the services and we struggled to fund services. We had something like 24% unemployment. We only had about 25,000 people in employment. We had far more people retired. We went through very difficult times in those periods and we were committed to do the best we could for the island by investing the money in the structure and investing money into house building, improving schools, improving many things by using money that were there. And at that time we had a national debt, by the way. We actually lifted the Isle of Man up and created income within the island itself, generated that helped improve the quality of life on the island. And that then moved on when the ministerial system came in and the government was able to properly coordinate its policies. And if you've got a good investment programme and actually achieve it, the island does well. One of the issues seems to be now, we hear a lot of talk of what goes in, but we see very little being achieved. So the outcome is not as good. And yes, we still are under pressure and will always be under pressure financially, but we actually have a lot of money in reserve and we shouldn't forget that.
OK. Juan, you're live with Tony Brown.
Hi, Andy. Tony, how are you?
Hiya. Hi, Juan.
Congratulations on your appointment for serving the people down there. I agree with
Thank
what
you.
You've been saying on a lot of the stuff. I think local government and commissioners are very valuable. I think it keeps national government in check a little bit, and we need some experience in there, and we also need new faces and new blood in there. Totally agree with everything you're saying about heritage. I think there's a lack of that. I've said this on this programme many times. There's a lack of interest in keeping our heritage. I'm very big on bigging the island up wherever I go, and you know, wherever you seem to go, the Isle of Man is always known, but it's always known for either racing or tax avoidance. And it's nice to try and big it up with the other things that we've got. I totally agree with your sentiments on that.
Thank you.
I want to jump back quickly onto something that you said, which was on the leave to introduce for private members' bills. I just wanted to clarify that the taxpayers' money would be paying for this once it has been passed by other members on a leave to introduce. The AG's office would then come into place and it would be taxpayers' money that would pay for the legals and everything to be set up. Would that be correct?
That's the case in relation to a private member's bill that the private member is responsible for themselves. If, for example, let's say you as an individual decided you wanted to have a bill put before the House and you were successful in getting that, you would have to pay all the costs yourself as an individual who's not a member of the House.
And you said that the members would be happy if the bill was not harmful, and that would give it the leave to introduce and carry forward. My question would be, I know we're running short of time, so I'm just being quick with this. We mentioned the access boat zone bill before, and the leave to introduce and put this through was put forward. My concerns here is, you as a former chief minister and national politician, a law lecturer and a Timbal member, former Timbal member and a former AG said that there was massive problems with this bill, but yet it has still had leave to introduce. What is the problem that's going on with government? Because we have someone like Alistair Ramsay, who I'm sure you worked with while you were in national politics, is saying that inside Comyn, the politics needs reforming and is broken. So can you explain from your experience what's going on at the moment?
Right. Well, first, it's not a government bill. I think that has to be made clear. It's not a government bill, so they have no ownership of it. That's the first thing. As far as whether or not members accept a bill, and if I did use the point it's not harmful, I mean, what I'm saying is it does not impact on our rights as individuals. It does not bring in legislation that impacts on how we live on the island in a way that's adverse to our nature, if you like, as a democracy. And that's where the vigilance of the members of the House of Keys is critically important. The other thing is, of course, this bill actually got given its second reading before it went out to consultation, and that's the bit that's causing the problem. It should have gone out to consultation before it went into the Keys for its first reading. So it's got out a click on that, and in fairness to the mover of the bill, who is now a minister but wasn't when she moved it, she has gone out to consultation through the Tynwald website, and as I say, I put in a substantial submission on why I think it's wrong. At the leave to introduce, certain statements that were made but have not evolved into the bill, and I think it's that bit that we rely on the members of the Keys to sort out. But it is a problem that they've already given its second reading. It's now going to go through its clauses. When it comes back, maybe the member who's moving it will make some adjustments to reflect public concern, may have learned from some of those views that it's fact needs some changes that are important. We just have to wait and see what they do.
Okay, got to go. Ewan, thanks for calling today.
Cheers, Tony. Cheers, Andy.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. So, Tony, we're out of time, Tony Brown, but I just want to ask for your opinion on something that, well, I don't think this has happened before. So we have three ex-ministers in local government. Two have just been re-elected. Two veteran politicians on the Isle of Man, yourself and Mr. Cretney. Why has this happened?
I think it's happened because there is concern at local level within our small communities that government is being over-dominant in what's happening in our communities. We're having things inflicted on us that we don't necessarily want, and we feel we're not being listened to. And the other thing is that many of our infrastructure is deteriorating to a level that's not acceptable. We have roads that are in a heck of a state, pavements in a heck of a state, down to soil in some places, and nobody's doing anything about it. These are things at local level that matter, and I think that from our point of view, we're seeing this and saying this has to be reversed.
Okay, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, my pleasure.
That's it for Man in Line. Have a great bank holiday weekend. Back on Tuesday.
WIN.